So good evening, good morning, good night, wherever you are on the planet listening to the pod. Welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast. This is the pod that gives the real fans a real voice, real opinions. We don't fence it, we don't we give it to you straight, raw and with honesty.
We could lose to Liverpool on a Sunday, and if I see you just having fun with your kids in the garden on a Wednesday, I'm annoyed. Do you know what I mean? Why are you on Insta pissed? Do you know what I mean? I'm pissed that I'm looking at you.
He kicks the ball like an infant sometimes. I'm looking at him thinking, is that as hard as you could kick the ball? He's like, it's not good enough. His technique is wrong.
Since the class of 92, I can't really think of many great young players that Man United have produced.
My name is Jordan, and just before I introduce my panel for the week, another reminder, follow us on Twitter if you're not already, FFP_11. Subscribe to the pod on the iTunes Library Football Fans Podcast, and let's make this pod the most popular and the baddest pod out there. And just another footnote to mention that we're going to have hopefully a special guest on the pod next week. I won't mention his name, but hopefully we'll have a great guest on the pod next week. And in addition to that, we'll have a competition as well. We'll be giving away some prizes next week on the pod too. So check into the pod next week. We've got some goodies and some good people on the panel next week as well. So getting on to this week's panel, we have our Tottenham Hotspur supporter, Ollie, our resident Chelsea fan, Gabriel, and our Manchester United supporter, Marvin. How are we doing, fellas?
All good.
Hopefully we can get an entrance like you gave to the people that are coming next week.
What the prize is, what the prize.
Plenty of goodies.
So we're special guests here as well. Don't forget that, George.
All right, next week I'm going to give you a special isolated... just your,
okay. I just want a prize.
all right, guys, let's kick off with a couple of quick questions. Marvin, should Newcastle... and I'm going to say this next sentence quite a lot leading up to next season.
Give up?
Well, not only that, but bearing in mind the £1 billion TV deal that kicks in next summer, should Newcastle just cut their losses and pull the trigger on McLaren?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the thing about McLaren, I am actually one of the people that have a lot of respect for him because of what he did at United. If you read some of the autobiographies by United players, they say how he revolutionized their training methods, how he was a breath of fresh air. He was a great coach. But I think that's the point. McLaren is a great coach. Now, I think to his detriment, the Newcastle transfer policy, let's just get somebody from France, anybody who speaks French, is... it leaves a lot to be desired. But I remember there was a period of time when that was a big deal and they were uncovering those gems. But I just think you look at that. I mean, Palace were good, but I mean, I think they'd never scored five in a Premiership.
That was the first time.
Never scored five in a Premiership game. Newcastle were leading, Jude, and they got annihilated. And I didn't see anybody on that pitch that looked like they care where Newcastle will be next year. I think they're almost sort of, you know, barring a miracle or a managerial change, going back, to be honest.
Okay. Gabriel, do you think paying Messi the reported $800,000 a week if he goes to City next season would ruin football, especially in this country?
No, I don't think it would ruin football.
Would you have a problem with it?
No, not particularly, because I think, you know, you look at how much, you know, executives and football clubs make in general, why have a problem when a player gets a huge amount, you know, a huge salary? And also, I think
they're not making 800 grand a week though. Execs.
No, execs are not. But I mean, football clubs in general, it's a $1 billion business, and the people who are actually entertaining
should get the lion's share of that money.
I think they should get a good share. And I think, don't get me wrong, I think it's too much. But imagine what getting Messi would do for Man City.
What you'd get back in
terms of the commercial side. And just really, I mean, they're on their way, but just really making them almost an A-list club. If you can attract the greatest player of your generation, everybody looks at you. So I think City should break the bank for him. I think the figures you mentioned are too much, but I wouldn't think it would ruin football. And I'd love to see Messi in the Premiership.
Is there a figure that's too much?
Oh, supply and demand, Jordan. You know, I haven't got, I never look at anyone else's salary with envy, because if someone's willing to pay it, then chances up, then maybe they're worth it. And I think, you know, because you know, someone's paying it. So,
I'm so different, you know. Sorry to interrupt.
Go on.
I look at it with lots of envy. Do you know what I mean? I'm so different. And I remember, and this is going way back, it might have even been before Abramovich, but I remember when you signed Laudrup.
Yeah.
And Laudrup was getting £50,000 a week.
Yeah.
And I remember at that time looking at a house and it was like 70 grand. I was thinking, he could buy that house in 2 weeks. And it's like, it's snowballing and snowballing. And for me, it's where does it end? Do you know what I mean? Because you when people think about the money and the game and all of this, sometimes I think they forget about the Portsmouths and the Leeds of the world who, you know, overextended on salary.
Is that City's problem? If City can afford to pay 800 grand a week,
I don't think they shouldn't
be held back because other teams can't cut their cloth.
I don't think it's City's problem, but then I think United then try and sign somebody of lesser quality, right? A lot lesser quality, and they want 400, 500. Because for me, Messi is the cream of the crop, but once you move that barrier, then everything underneath it is possible, and then it just gets a bit problematic. I mean, I still get annoyed that John O'Shea was on 80 grand at United. John O'Shea was on 80 grand at United.
How much is Rooney on?
Rooney's on about 200, I think.
I think he's on just
I thought it was 300.
Yeah, I think he's on like 280.
And let's not pull any punches. I mean, every time I think of that, I want to smash something. Sometimes my own skull, right? So it's I mean, Rooney, I mean, I'm pretty sure that Rooney's agent hasn't got an MBE after his name, but he should have a knighthood because he's played the game phenomenal.
Do you think that something dies in them as well as players when they get that kind of money? Like Rooney, since he got that deal, has he ever been the same player?
Well, I mean, Adebayor is probably one of the best examples, right? Like when it was contract year and time to sign on a dotted line, automatically he started pulling his finger out. And then once the contract was signed, he was poor. I don't know if it kills them, because at the end of the day, you know, it's a negotiation, and you know, Rooney's got a family to feed, and you take the best you can get. I don't think Rooney should ever turn around and say, you know what, you're paying me too much money, I'm going to give some of it back. But I just think, you know, people keep, the thing that gets annoys me, people keep talking about all this TV money, you know, the clubs are going to make so much money, they're going to make so much money. I get that, and we're paying that TV money, but I also don't think, because of that, players should get ridiculous cash. It's just getting to point where they're going to hire people to play the game for them.
We're going to debate in depth that subject in a couple of weeks' time, because I've got a funny feeling this summer there's going to be, it might not be Messi, but I think it's going to be a really, really, really big deal. Someone's going to come to the Premier League and it's going to be a lot. So we're going to come back to that topic. Ollie, is Ross Barkley leading the race for the Young Player of the Year award?
Ross Barkley, no, not for me.
I've got some names. I did some homework today. I've got, the only ones I could think of that could challenge him are Bellerin, Martial, Gomez, Ali.
I'm not that excited about any of those, to be honest. And that's even Ali. There's been a lot of talk about Ali recently, and I think he's done well, but I still think he's pretty raw. And I don't think that Barkley's not really impressed me this season, to be honest with you. I don't think that he's been amazing.
Zuma Jod?
He wasn't on my list. Is he under 20? Was it 21? Because I thought it was 21, that young player.
Yeah.
How old is he?
He's 20.
2020, okay.
How old is Sterling? Sterling must have been 20.
That's a good point, yeah. They forgot about him as well, yeah. Because he could have gone to the Euros, couldn't he? Not the Euros. The Euros. Okay, yeah, Sterling.
But I don't think Barkley's doing enough yet. He's not winning games, is he? He's not kind of, you know, they couldn't beat Bournemouth the other day. And Bournemouth have been struggling, right? I know he scored a couple of goals. He scored a couple of goals against Villa. But those teams are fodder. They should be fodder for a man who's you're talking about being a Young Player of the Year. Those sort of teams should be fodder for him. He should be winning those games on his own. So I don't really buy the Barkley thing. I saw him against the England game the other week as well. I mean, again, you know, we didn't come out of that game didn't come out of that game talking about Ross Barkley, did we? We came out of the game talking about Dele Alli. Everyone was talking about Dele Alli, weren't they? But then even then, as I say, I still think Dele Alli's quite raw, and I'm a bit worried about the amount of attention he's getting, because There's only gonna come a fall after all this talk. You know what I mean, for him. And that's not to say I don't rate him or I don't think he's good or any of that. I just think that he's got a little way to go.
What about Stones? Stones must be in the mix, isn't he?
Stones, yeah. I missed him as well.
How old
Stones,
is he,
yeah,
though?
He's young. He must be about 20.
He's young, yeah. Another young player I want to talk about. Hey guys, Jack Grealish. I want to ask a question. I'll start with you, G. Do you think he's everything that's wrong with the modern British young football player? He got involved in some nonsense last week where Villa got battered at Everton. He was allowed by his manager to stay over and see some friends and got caught up partying. But this is on the back of a couple of other things in the last 6 months where his press hasn't been very good. But is he a symbol of the modern British footballer? Talented, lots of money, lots of hype, but involved in nonsense.
There's probably two parts to your question I'd like to answer, mm-hmm. if you don't mind me, Jordan. I mean, first thing, I think if you look at that incident by itself, as an isolated incident, it's probably a small thing. But overall, he knows there's a spotlight on him. He knows he's been in trouble before. And he knows his team just got embarrassed. Keep your head down. But in terms of what you said about talented, like, honest, I mean, in the past, we've seen mercurial players that you're worried about. They're going to wait, you know, really talented young players you're worried about. And they're going to waste their talent. I'm not worried about Jack Grealish. I look at him and I just think, why is he a topic of discussion? No disrespect, Jordan. Mm-hmm. But in general speaking, you know, I saw Paul Merson was on Sky Sports News talking about how when he was young, he was Brad Pitt. And, Jack probably feels he's Brad Pitt now. I just think, why are we talking about him? I think the best he will end up being is another Lee Hendry. And that's not that... And that's not that great for me. So, yes, he's got some things to work on. I think this weekend's incident wasn't that big, but overall he knows he's got a spotlight on him. He's got to behave himself, but I just don't think he's that good in any way. I don't know why England, you know, Roy Hodgson was tripping himself up to try to get him into the England team. I think he probably would have been better off playing for Ireland because he would have got more game time. And I just don't, you know, I honestly I look at him and I don't think he'd be out of place in the Championship.
Okay, and on Gabriel's point there about him playing for England now, that really, really made me uncomfortable that he took, I think it was 3 months, because he needed to decide whether he was more Irish than English, which in itself is weird. And it blatantly says that I was thinking about the commercial elements of who to play for and the endorsement deals I can get. Because if you feel more Irish, that should be 3 seconds, right? If you feel more English, I'm playing for England. Do you think he's all that? Then do you think the hype around him is justified, or do you think that...
No, I don't think he's all that at all. I don't really understand why people are talking about him, a bit like what Gabe is saying. I don't really understand what the big sort of hullabaloo is about. What's he done? What has he done so far in his career? He's done nothing. He's been talked up a lot by Tim Sherwood, who, let's get this straight, Tim Sherwood, it was in his own interest to show, look what I'm doing, bringing through these lads. And, you know, that's all part of Sherwood's shtick, isn't it? It's kind of, you know, I'm going to shake it up at Aston Villa, I'm going to do something different down here. So it kind of made it suited his kind of, you know, his agenda that someone like Grealish comes through so he can say, yeah, you know, this guy is someone I'm sticking my hat on. I don't really think that the guy was or is that good that we should be all giving him the kind of attention that he's getting. He's not really done anything in the game. He's had a couple of games for Villa. What's he done, though? Has he scored any big goals? Has he dictated a game that you think, good grief, you know, I can't believe what he did there. There's nothing there. So I don't really see that we should be giving this guy as much praise yet. And to be honest with you, Remy Gard is probably looking at it and thinking, I'm going to make you change the under-21s. That's where you should be. You ain't good enough. He's probably looking and thinking, I've seen about 50 players in France.
Where he's come from as well.
Yeah, who are better than you. And it's like, he's probably thinking to himself, you've just solved me a problem. You've saved me a problem because I can put you in the under-20. I'll never talk about you again. I'll forget about you. Next thing you know, you wouldn't be surprised Jack Grealish is being sold, as Gabe said, being sold to some Championship team, and we'll never talk about him again. I think he made a really bad... He's been badly advised. He's got stupid people around him. And you've got to ask questions about the kind of mates that you've got that you go out on a night out. Not to say what he's doing is right, but you're going out on nights out. And every time you go out, someone's taking a photograph and sending it to the newspapers. Who are your mates? You haven't got... You got the wrong mates. You need to look at the people you're hanging with and understand that they ain't your friends. You know what I mean? Because the minute you do something wrong... they're going to put it, they're going to take a photo of you and put it in the papers. So you've got to look at your friends, but you also got to look about who you're being advised by, because whoever advised him to go and play for England rather than Ireland, when he's got absolutely no chance of playing for England at this stage of his career, he'd be much better off playing at Ireland. He would get a lot of games, and he would have been, you know,
could develop. Yeah.
He would have been developed. Mm. The chance of him playing for England are very, very slim.
Marv, as a football fan, how much do you care about players going out and partying on the back of a 4-0 defeat? Does that stuff bother you?
You know, I think I'm an isolated case, Joe, because I follow every Man United player on Instagram that has an Instagram account. And we could lose to Liverpool on a Sunday. And if I see you just having fun with your kids in the garden on a Wednesday, I'm annoyed. Do you know what I mean? Why are you on Insta pissed? Do you know what I mean? I'm pissed. I'm pissed that I'm looking at you. But I think I sort of disagree with Ollie to some account. And it's kind of picking up what G said about Merson, right? Is the fact that, in a way, this is... You said, is this something that's sad about the modern game? I think it's always been in the game. The difference is that there are a million one cameras. Like, who used to go to a nightclub with a big old Polaroid in their pocket? You didn't, did you? You just went to a nightclub. The ability to take photos, and it probably isn't his friends. If I was in the club and I could see it and I could make a little bit of cash, I'd sell it to the papers. The fact is, the exposure has gone up thousands of percent, right? So, yes, you need to be more... You need to be more respectful of the fact that the world has changed, and if you are out, you're going to get exposed. But then the flip side of that coin...
So it's very quickly, the other scandal that he got involved in, that was with his mates. He wasn't in a club or anything. He got photographed out of his head on the floor. I can't remember what it was.
Well, he was doing the balloons when he...
Yeah, but it wasn't...
Because Sterling's done that as well.
But it wasn't... He was with his people. It wasn't like he was in a club, a public place. He was with his mates.
Yeah. But I'm telling you, just think about this for a second, right? Merson at 21 years old, playing for Arsenal.
And he's been open about it. He's openly said that he was getting
involved. What sort of pictures would we have now? It would be insane. Gazza. Think about Gazza now. Even Gazza now, think about him as a footballer. Those days in Scotland at Rangers, it would be insane. I just think the world has changed. The thing about for me is, I don't know why we can't let these youngsters be youngsters when it comes to internationals, right? Because I've heard and people have told me on numerous occasions, like Ireland have a team of people that look at young English talent with a bit of Irish ties, like they've had a couple of potatoes or, you know, they like some Guinness, right? And they go out and they tap them up early to the point where there needs to be a discussion of whether Grealish plays for Ireland or England. They just need to, I think people, like, fair enough, Ireland want to tap up the talent early, but you just need to let a player develop. Like, you don't have to burst on the scene and instantly get a cap. It just annoys me. Even annoys me that Dele Alli's playing, you know, senior football at the moment. Just, you know, establish yourself in the Prem, get a game, be a regular, and then, you know, just develop into it. Obviously, you get cases like Rooney and Owen, but it's just becoming more and more where they're thinking, oh, he looks good, so let's get him international experience early so he knows what to do. Why? Why do we need to do that? When they're ready, they're ready.
And they should go through the right process, which is go into the under-21s, exactly. See what you can do there,
exactly.
See if we can win something in that tournament, and then, you know, and then you can progress.
And we always talk about that German team that was under-21s that had Özil, Kadira and all those guys. They did it the right way. They didn't rush them, and then they graduated together and were insane. England's
Spanish team as well.
Yeah, exactly. It just happens too much. And I also think Remy Gard, he needed to take the story away from an awful defeat as well, right? Like, fair enough, Villa are struggling, but if you think you're going to get points, get it against a newly promoted team like Watford on your own turf. I just think, you know, it was an easy... It was almost like a Mourinho move to think, you know what? You know, it might have happened even... I personally think if they'd won 4-0 and Grealish went out and celebrated, he wouldn't get... And the same pictures came out. I don't think he's getting relegated to the under-21s because it's all celebratory. I think the issue was they lost and he was out having a good time. Mm. So I think Remy Gard saw that as an easy thing, because the next day we weren't talking about, wow, Villa got packed. Agallo looked like a worldie. It was Jack Grealish, you know, these youngsters, is getting punished because he was badly behaved. Do you know what I mean?
Okay. So, G, do you think that Remy Gardner in that sense handled it well then? Do you think that maybe it was a convenient thing to come out with to put the story on Grealish rather than the battering they had the night before? And do you feel that putting him to the under-21s was the right punishment, or do you feel that maybe he should have just took him to one side and say, listen, I know you're a young man. I let you go out with your friends on that night. Don't do that again.
The cynic in me thinks that Remy Gard set him up.
you laid on the champagne.
I'm being deadly serious. First thing, you do your research about your players. You've seen he's had 3 or 4 incidents. Why do you say it's cool for him to stay?
It's weird that you would let a player stay out. He's not going out to the opera. You know if he says, boss, can I stay in wherever Liverpool, wherever they were? Can I stay out with my friends? You know what's going to happen. Yeah. So maybe you've got a...
So it's like you let him stay out. And then when he gets, you know he's, like you said, George, you know he's going to go out and party. When he goes out and party, gets caught, then you punish him. It's like you've kind of given him the license.
He broke a curfew or something. You know what I mean? I mean, I was annoyed that it came up as a pop-up on my Sky Sports news that Jack Grealish relegated to under-21. Why is that big news?
Yeah.
He's not a good player. He's in a crap team. And I'm looking to find out like who's on pole and stuff like that. You're giving me, he's got relegated to the under-21s. I couldn't even watch an under-21s Villa game if I had the channel. It's not even on TV. No one cares. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so in answer to your question, Joel, no, I don't think he handled it well. I think if he says no, we've lost 4-0, stay on the coach. None of it ever happens. He's only handled it well if, as Marv said, he was looking for a deflection and he found one.
To our next topic now, I want to talk a little bit about the money that's been pumped into academies at various clubs, and I'm going to title this section Academies versus Non-League. Start with you, Ollie. But are Jamie Vardy and Ravel Morrison two examples that football academies and the millions that are pumped into the top academies are just a waste of money? You've got Ravel Morrison, I'm reading, has been sent back, wants to come back, or been sent back by Lazio to the UK. He's a product of someone that's gone through various academies, touted as the next big thing, this talented guy, has gone abroad. He's not taking his opportunity. You've got Vardy on the same weekend, basically, breaking records. He's come through. We're not going to go through his story, but we know his story. But the money that's been spent on some of these academies and some of the players that have come through non-league to have successful careers, why are clubs spending so much money on these academies?
Well, I think Ravel Morrison's probably not a very good example because he had the best chance you could possibly want. You know, he came up at Man United under Ferguson and he blew it, didn't he? So I don't really think that he's not a good example, really, of a player who's dedicated. He's not... There's something not right there, isn't there? You know, if he's been through as many teams as he has, then there's something not right with a guy. He's not actually doing what he should do, which is get his head down and play football and try and be the best player he can be. So it's his own fault if he's not made it. But with Vardy, we always have this conversation about players coming through and this one being missed and that one not being given the opportunity and all the rest of it. You know, it happens, doesn't it? Players come through non-league, some players get missed. I do think there's a general problem in this country in terms of the kind of players that they go for. I think that there's a definite idea that a lot of coaches have, which is you've got to look a certain way, you've got to play a certain way, you've got to be big, basically. You've got to be a big bruiser. You've got to, you know, you've got to fulfill certain criteria to become a footballer in this country. And I don't think that is any, you know, I don't think that's a coincidence. I don't think that's something that doesn't happen for a reason. I think that there's definitely something in this country that they're clearly not spotting talent, are they? They don't spot talent in this country. They're not doing it in the right way. They're looking for a particular kind of footballer, and that kind of footballer isn't... You have to question whether if someone like Lionel Messi came up through the English system, whether he'd actually make it. Seriously. You know, someone would probably turn around and say to him, oh, you're a bit small, aren't you? Do you know what I mean? Oh, you're going to get knocked off the ball. You know, oh, he doesn't take a tackle well. Do you know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. You know, we laugh about people saying, oh, yeah, could he handle playing on a wet night in Stoke and stuff? But that is the mentality in this country, and I think it's a problem. So I do think that there is an issue there with with that kind of, you know, that kind of mentality of bringing through players that they've got to be big and strong. You know, the big, strong guys are the ones who make it, not the little ones, the big, strong ones. So I think that's a problem. And I do think that there's, you know, there's a lot of money pumped into these academies, but I kind of wonder what the point of it is. I mean, you look at Manchester City's, you know, they're talking about, well, we've got the best academy in the country, we've got the best facilities. But are they ever really going to bring anyone through that academy? Or are they always going to be looking for, earlier on your question was, should they pay, you know, 800 grand a week? If you're going to pay 800 grand a week to one player, right, something's got to go. You know what I mean? Something's got to go. It's not, you, if you're going to be doing that, then maybe you're not going to have that extra couple of guys working in the academy doing the hard yards of trying to bring kids through, because you're spending 800 grand a week
financing Messi,
who's probably at the end of his career. You know what I mean? Who's in the twilight of his career thinking, yeah, I'll just come for a payday. So I just think that there's issues there. Chelsea, another example.
Well, I want to get onto UG, because
another club where you're bringing through loads of young players, but it's like, are any of these players going to get a chance?
Yeah,
because they're always going to be under that pressure of
now.
We got to get players now. You know that Mourinho's in the background thinking, I want to play Loftus-Cheek. I want to play these guys. You know what I mean? Yeah. I want to go out there and get ready-made. I want ready-made. I want players who are, you know, who are going to do it right now. And that's the problem in the league.
Well, gee, your club, and as already mentioned there, Manchester City have got two supposed great academies. Yeah. But between the two teams, I'm only seeing Iheanacho and Loftus-Cheek who have had 10 games between them this season, if that. Why are clubs like yours spending so much money on these academies? And to be fair, you're winning. I think you've won 3 out of the last 4 FA Youth Cups, something like that. You do really, really well at youth level, but no one's getting a play. What is the point of spending all that money on academies if there are players in the lower league, first of all, and the players that you do produce from the academies aren't even getting a play?
Well, I think that
waste of money, isn't it?
You could argue it's a waste of money, but I think you've got to remember that Chelsea's infrastructure has only really been set up over the last 10 years, right? So
That's long enough to produce somebody, surely.
Well, you could argue that's Loftus-Cheek, couldn't you?
Is he produced?
We bought Zuma. So it depends on whether you think that. It's difficult with Chelsea. I think the problem that we have comes more to the culture at the club, where winning is everything. So if you look at it and you're a manager at Chelsea, likelihood is, on average, you get 2 to 3 years. Why are you worried about, you're not going to worry about bringing players through. You're going to worry about, I need to win this FA Cup. I need to win this Carling Cup, because if I don't, I'm going to be sacked. At least, chances are I'll be sacked anyway, but at least let me go out with some trophies to my name.
In that same 10-year window you mentioned there, Southampton, around the same kind of time, have stepped up their academy.
Yep.
They've produced at least a handful of players. So is it really believable and plausible that in 10 years you haven't produced another John Terry, a Frank Lampard, a Wayne Rooney? There's got to be one player, surely, in a decade of investment.
With respect to Southampton, totally respectful, we have produced players that are good enough for Southampton, like Ryan Bertrand. We just haven't produced players that are good enough for Chelsea. Or City haven't produced players that are good enough for Man City. Now, I think what Arsenal and Man United have done historically is let people like, you know, John O'Shea and Wes Brown steal a living, because let's just be honest, they're not real elite players, but they're good squad players. So they've come in, they've got medals that way surpass their talent. And, you know, Ferguson gets a pat on the back for, you know, bringing young players through. But I don't think...
Yeah, but what about the other ones, the good ones that they had?
There's more good than bad there, surely.
What about, like, Giggs goals and all the rest of them?
No, since the class of 92, I can't really think of many great young players that Man United have produced. I think that's it's an old concept, but it's a concept that, you know, as a football fan and a football club, is something you should strive to. But maybe not one that many clubs around the world or in Europe are actually achieving. I don't know.
I can't agree with that. I've got to say that, you know, you say Bertrand's not good enough for Chelsea.
He'd get in your team now.
If he'd been given the opportunity, surely he would be in your team now.
Personally, I would have kept Bertrand. I'll give you that example. But at the time, if you looked at, you had Azpilicueta left back and Ivanovic right back, Bertrand wasn't going to get a lot of games. I think if you knew that Ivanovic would have crashed and burned like he had this season, then maybe it was a lack of foresight on our behalf. But I think at that time, Bertrand felt, from what I understand, that he needed to play games and he wasn't going to get the games that he required at Chelsea.
Okay. Marvin, I've got a list of names here, some players that I was checking out have come from non-league. Ian Wright, Les Ferdinand, Stuart Pearce, Danny Ings, Stan Collymore, Chris Smalling, Vinnie Jones, Kevin Phillips, Charlie Austin, Alan Pardew, I didn't know, John Barnes and Chris Waddle all came from non-league and had decent careers, I would say. There's talent in the lower leagues. Should teams like Chelsea and City just forget the academy? Just be honest and say, look, forget the academy. We're not really bothered about bringing through our own players and spend that money on sending scouts to wherever these guys came from.
First of all, I'm insulted by G.
I knew that was coming.
I never let people just pop a shot and then move on, Jordan. Like, you know what? I'm not Wes Brown or John O'Shea's biggest fans, right? But John O'Shea has multiple Irish caps, right? And I think the fact that he's talking about nicking a living, for me, that's everything that's wrong with Chelsea mentality. Because they're not starters and because they're not, you know, in the top 10, they're not in the on the Ballon d'Or sheet all the time, that they're not important. They were integral parts of the team, right? And they contributed to trophies, right? They played their games. I just think that's ridiculous. Like, John O'Shea was the longest serving Manchester United reserve team captain, and he was captaining the team as pretty much as soon as he got promoted from the under 18s. Like, they're not great players, but they're part of the teams. And I think sometimes it's those players that help you get over the line. It's because you haven't got much depth outside of the first 11 that people like Ivanovic, when they do go down, you got nothing there. You go out and get randoms from Germany because you don't give those players the chance. Loftus-Cheek is an isolated person, but, you know, I know De Bruyne wasn't homegrown per se, but you guys make snap decisions and you think that guy's not going to start for us, let's get rid of him, and then they go and prove you wrong. So I won't have it against my boy Wes and John.
I guess what my point is people are patting Ferguson on the back for producing Wes Brown and John O'Shea, or Pat Wenger on the back, you know, I'll put someone else in there. Pat Wenger on the back for producing the Kieran Gibbs. But what happens if those players are produced at Chelsea, they're discarded. Now, whether you think that's right or wrong.
Do you think it's right?
In some cases, yes. In other cases, no. Bertrand's an example where I think it's gone wrong because we've had to go and spend 20 million on the left back who's no better than Bertrand. Yeah. But most 9 out of 10 times, I don't think there's many players. I mean, De Bruyne and Mata, obviously, but they're real elite players. The problem was that they just didn't fit into the way Jose played. Yeah. But I don't think there's many young players that have left Chelsea that have gone away that I now look back and say, wow, look what he's done over there. We should have kept him and he'll be in
what
the Chelsea
Lukaku,
team.
What about Lukaku, for instance?
I was going to say, yeah. I mean, I know, didn't you buy him, though?
We bought Lukaku, but I guess Lukaku's another great example. Just because a young player has talent.
What about Salah as well? I think he could do something at Chelsea.
I don't think... When I saw of Salah, he wasn't good enough for Chelsea, but he's done really well at Fiorentina. But going back to Lukaku, people call Lukaku the new Drogba, but he couldn't play... He can't play with his back to goal. Like, I just think with Lukaku was, you know, at the point where we sold him, he was almost, and, you know, he was a ready-made player, but he wasn't a player that Mourinho liked, and that's why we got rid of him, not because he wasn't good enough.
Okay, just back on the point of non-league players and teams spending so much money on academies.
Yeah.
And, you know, Jamie Vardy, I'm hearing now, is setting up his own academy to highlight the talent that's down there. Why are these teams spending millions and millions of pounds when there's clearly talent that in the non-leagues?
Well,
English as well.
I just, to be honest, Jude, I think there's space for a mix, right? And I agree with Ollie, like, you're always going to find a diamond in a rough if you look hard enough, right? But I also think that investing in the youth is absolutely the right thing to do. We've just talked about how much money is in the games. And I think if you gave up on an academy or a youth-based system, then when England continued to churn out poor tournaments and poor performances, the first thing everybody would be saying is, they're not investing in youth. Look at all of these academies that are in Spain and Germany. We're not doing that. So I think you've got to invest, right? And if there's lots of cash in the game, as everyone's just said there is, then you've got to give a little bit to the youth. I think Vardy is a glaring example of the fact that maybe the Premiership's gaze has come further away from the non-leagues, and where, you know, they'd go to a Russia or a, you know, to a Ukraine and pick up, you know, like a Coates that's at Liverpool, people like that. There's probably people in the non-leagues that could have been developed to that level. And I think it ties in with what G said, is like, there's just no time to develop a player now, right? Premiership clubs would rather go out onto the continent and pluck something than, you know, either investing in the youth or looking at the non-leagues. And that, for me, is sad. I think a part of it is me as a fan, right? Because I like to see what's coming through at United, for instance. But I'm one of those annoying people, and I'll be really honest and upfront about it. I'll look at the United Academy, and I'll look at the flags next to their name. And if I see one that's Portuguese or Brazilian, I go, oh, I'm going to Google him. He must be good. You know what I mean? I forget about the English talent that's in there. Yeah. So I honestly think there is space for a balance, but I don't think they should ever give up on academies. I think they should invest more. John Barnes, the story of him, I remember watching a show, and I think a taxi driver saw him playing on a park and went back to Watford. Do you think if I saw a player playing a park, I could ring up Louis and go, hey Louis, I just seen a player. Do you know what I mean? The world's changed. Yeah. It's not the same. Like, but they've got the scouting network has to work harder in the non-league.
With the non-league, are you going to get players for the elite clubs, for the top four or five clubs from the non-league? I mean, Jamie Vardy is the best example, and there are questions about him going to one of the...
On the list I just gave earlier on, half those players play for top six clubs.
Well, nowadays, in modern
football... So what are you saying, that the non-league game's looking. Got
crap? No, I'm not saying the non-league game's got crap. What I'm saying is the top Premiership teams now are thinking, how can they play to suit what's happening in Europe?
So
therefore, they're not going to look at the non-league, which is, you know, no disrespect for the non-league, because it's some great football, but it can be quite route one, quite physical. That's not how you're going to win a Champions League or a World Cup, for that matter.
Your point ties into my next point. I want to ask Oli, is the scrapping of the reserve team league, and they've replaced it with the under 21 league now, is that a problem now? Because what's happening now with those under 21 players is they're getting the great technical coaching that academies offer, but they're not getting the kind of hard graft, you know, getting stuck in. I've heard that Ali, the reason why he's been praised so much is because he went back to MK Dons, he mixed up with some players and some pros that weren't going to be top level, but he had to learn how to be competitive, be a man, get involved and win games. He didn't get the kind of glossy, fancy academy training and how to learn how to shoot and cross and pass. He was in the mix, and we're seeing a little bit of the combo of the two. Has the scrapping of the reserve league, where young players were learning a little bit what they might have got in non-league, of being competitive, has that hurt the next generation of English players coming through?
I think that the fact that players get that opportunity by playing at a lower level, you know, we've heard the story of Townsend, we've heard the story of Harry Kane, how many clubs they get loaned out to. I do think that works to some extent. So I think that they get that opportunity. I think they get that opportunity, but I still go back to my original point. I still think that there's a problem in the way that they spot talent in this country. I don't think, and the way they develop talent, I don't think they do it in the right way. I think the clubs probably, once you get into a club, you'll probably be okay. If you go to Arsenal and you're working under Wenger and the people he's got there, you're probably going to get taught the right way. But we've heard it so many times. You know, if you learn something the wrong way up to the age of 12 or whatever it is, then you're done, aren't you? You've got to be learning the right way from the age of six and stuff now, aren't you? You've got to be learning right, and that's the problem. A lot of these players, by the time they get to that level, they've been taught the wrong way, haven't they? And if you're being taught the wrong way, then that's a problem.
So what's the answer then? Because in places like Spain, they get the combination right of giving them the technical skills they need to learn to be able to control a ball, pass a ball,
chip. About the way they
spot.
They're
also hardened about how to win games as well.
I think it's the way they spot talent. I just think the way we spot talent in this country is wrong. I don't think that you see it every week. If you go down and watch normal Sunday league football,
everyone thinks that the most important thing is a player who get in there and get, you know, and get tackles in and look like they're doing stuff. That isn't always the way that it's about. It's also about players who can understand the game, understand the how to dictate a game and how to affect a game. And sometimes that kind of running around headless chicken stuff, that don't win you games of football at the top level anymore. And I think that the top managers know that. And a lot of the top managers who happen to be foreign as well probably look at a lot of the English players and think, you can't do what I want. You can't do what I need you to do, you know. So that's why they end up going to the foreign players, because they have got that technical ability. And they've got that on top of the, you know, the natural grit and determination that Alan Hansen used to always talk about. I mean, you look at, seriously, by this stage now, I look at Sterling. We mentioned Sterling earlier as a good young player or whatever. But by this stage, right,
he should be able on a bit now.
He should be able to hit a ball better than he does, right? I'm not saying he's a bad player, but he should be able to take a shot from 20, 25 yards and not look like he's kicking the ball like an infant. He kicks the ball like an infant sometimes. I'm looking at him thinking, is that as hard as you could kick the ball? He's like, it's not good enough. His technique is wrong. And I think by this stage of his career, when people are telling me that he's such a fine talent, Raheem Sterling, and he's great and he's this and he's that, he should be able to do that kind of stuff at his age. It shouldn't be a question mark.
But
like that.
I'm just not, I hear what you're saying, but I'm just not sure whether what you said about coaching and getting stuck in and all that stuff, I'm not sure that's still the case. In the Prem, for instance, like you look at the Prem, but it's like, I think what you've seen is you've got loads of nationalities coaching in the game at the moment. I just personally think that the Vardy thing has made this massive issue a bit more public. The fact that with the way the youngsters are being nurtured, are they getting wrapped in cotton wool? Or are, because I think there is a place for them to toughen up and get a good kicking, for want of a better word. And I just don't think the youngsters are getting that anymore. So by the time they break into the Prem, you'll see someone really crap, like you know, one of the, like how Ivanovic is playing now. Ivanovic would still boy off one of our youngsters, like grabbing at United. I just don't think they're getting, I think they're getting the coaching. I just don't think they're getting the blend. And people need to realise the Prem and Spain are different leagues, right? You need to have a bit of grit. You won't get the Prem is not a great league for a technical player.
And that is my kind of point. Is the emphasis gone? Jack Wilshere is a prime example. Really pretty on the ball. Flick the ball. Can chip it. Can pass it nice. But you get stuck into Jack Wilshere in a competitive semi-final of a game, he's done.
Yeah.
Whereas someone of his equivalent, who's German, Spanish, even some of the kind of like the third world nations, they've got that mix. And is the answer for England getting that mix of players that are gritty and competitive and know how to win, but can also pass a ball really
and
well?
How many, I'm just not convinced that they know that there's a clear idea or a strategy about what England are trying to achieve. When England played Spain the other week, didn't Spain's manager turn around and say, you know, England, they haven't got a style anymore. I don't know what England are trying to achieve. You know, I don't know what they're...
Yeah.
There was a definite style. Once upon a time, there was a definite style about England. And this is what we've mentioned this about Leicester this season. Leicester are like a throwback. Leicester are like a throwback of archetypal British team, right? Fast, pacey, they get at you, they don't give up. They got a fast man up front. They get balls in. They're playing a game 100 miles an hour, and it's great to watch. We all love that. That's the British way. And I know it's Ranieri running that team, but they're pretty much playing the same way they were playing last year with Pearson. In the first half of last season, they were getting no luck. They got no luck at all. They played really well in the first half of the season, got no luck and kept losing games. Then suddenly it clicked, started winning games, and they haven't looked back. But their way of playing
was very British.
It's very British. Yeah. That's a British way of playing. And, you know, Vardy is a great example. You were talking about Vardy, but Vardy is playing in a team. And this is one of the problems as well, Jordan. Vardy is playing in a team where he is the main man and everything is worked towards him playing well. Now, it's all very well us talking about Vardy. Oh, yeah, should Vardy go off and get, you know, go somewhere else in January, but it won't be the same for him. How many times do we see where someone goes off somewhere and then suddenly they're not the main man anymore? Vardy won't go somewhere else and be the main man. He's the main man at Leicester. They play to his strengths.
Yeah. And George, the other thing I was going to ask is, we talk about these, you know, the Spains, the Germanys. There's actually like a lot of the young players from those countries in our academies, right? Mm. The question I have is, how many English players are in academies over there?
Well, exactly.
Yeah. It just doesn't happen. It's a whole mentality thing where, you know, people don't want to take the risk. I think Eric Dier is the only one that came through somebody else's academy. Doesn't happen.
Final point on this, AG. Bringing it back to fans, is there also a bit of a snobbery, and I'm going to use you as an example, that when you see a player that starts on the first day of the season for your team and it's announced that you've bought him from Fleetwood Town or wherever, you think, oh. But if a player comes from Portugal or from Spain and you've never heard of him, but he's got a nice exotic name and you bought him for 35 million, you're like, oh, is there a pressure from clubs to buy foreign rather than invest in the lower league? Simply because fans, that's the world we live in now, whereby, you know, foreign fancy names from abroad that cost 30 million. Lamela's a good example. You know, everyone expects him to be a good player because he costs 30 million. But there must be Lamelas in lower leagues.
Well,
answer honestly, G.
Yeah, it's a good... No, I don't... Personally, for myself, I don't think there is a snobbery. But I think that Chelsea will try to buy players to suit the way they play and to suit the competitions they're in. And you're not... I don't think you're necessarily going to get that from the lower leagues. I don't think Jamie Vardy would be a success at Chelsea. I think better strikers have failed at Chelsea. You know, there's a whole long list of them.
Chelsea's an isolated incident.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I look at Jamie Vardy. If Jamie Vardy came for Chelsea, for instance, he'd get a few games up front. He'd probably put out wide, like he did at Leicester initially, and that didn't really work out for him. No. So imagine that would not work for him at Chelsea.
All right, guys, I'm just going to move it on now. Got one of these now. Who is the better player? Start with you, Marvin. best defender, even. Vertonghen, Cahill, Koscielny.
Well, you know how I feel about Koscielny. And the problem is, I'm now skewed because all I hear from you and Natasha is, oh, Koscielny, Koscielny, Koscielny. So I watch him with a fine tooth comb and think, what the hell are these guys talking about? It's like, what are you talking about? Cahill, I've got mixed reviews, right? Because at first I was impressed and I think it was a really good example because he started at Villa, wasn't getting the games at Villa, went down to Bolton, played exceptional for Bolton and then got that big move. And I think he's an example of not going for the cash big times that people like Victor Moses and Scott Sinclair could learn a few things from. But when I look at Cahill, I actually don't think he's that good. I think Chelsea, I'd much rather have a Zuma than a Cahill. And I quite like Jan Vertonghen, right? I think he's a bit, there's times when he has, times when I think, wow, we should have signed him. And then there's other times when I think, and I think he's very representative of Spurs, where sometimes Spurs look really good and sometimes you're thinking, blimey, these guys really shouldn't even be in the Europa. And he kind of reflects it. But that being said, Koscielny's not a bad player, Jordan. I don't want you to leave here thinking that I think he is. I think he's a very good player. But out of the three, if I could take one at United, I'd probably just pip Koscielny with Vertonghen because I quite like him. And I think that's a person. He's like
you'd
a person.
Pip Vertonghen.
I'll pip Vertonghen. He's a personal favourite. But I think him and Koscielny are at
on a par.
And I think Cahill's a distant third for me, right? Because I honestly think, and I remember speaking to somebody who really knows their stuff in football, and I said, I just don't get this Cahill hype. Like, I would take Smalling and Jones above him in a heartbeat, even Phil Jones, I would. And they were like, yeah, but he's such a nice guy. And I was like, so? You know what I mean? I'd rather have a bastardly good defender.
Exactly, centre-backs are supposed to be horrible,
yeah,
surely.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, so I mean, maybe I'm being a bit harsh on Cahill, but I actually think if he went back to Villa or Bolton now, he wouldn't surprise me. I've watched him for England sometimes. I mean, the England centre-back thing, Chris Smalling aside, like, Jagielka as well. And I'm just like, we're in trouble. And Phil Jones as well. Like all of them, I look at them and I think a good striker would annihilate you. If I was Neymar, like a Brazil versus England, and I looked at
you're licking your lips, aren't you?
I'm just thinking,
well, like Suarez did.
Yeah, I'm gonna bet on me to score three or more straight away.
I mean, he ruined England, yeah. Didn't he, Suarez?
But I honestly think if I didn't know you and Natasha, I would have gone for Koscielny. But I'm just watching him,
for the listeners.
I'm just watching him so closely,
let's
Jordan.
Put this straight. I don't think he's as good as Natasha thinks he is. Yeah. But I think he's better than you think he is.
Well, the funny thing is, you
put him in your team of the year last year.
You did.
As well.
And that was before we even did this.
And right? Me and Marvin were looking, thinking, damn, have we missed something?
I remember we were in that room for about 2 hours talking about football. And we went round the table and we all did our 11. Ollie and I's 11 were different, but they were respectable. And then both you and Natasha were respectable up until Koscielny, and I left there thinking, and I didn't know Natasha very well then, I thinking, well, she clearly knows nothing about football and Jordan must just fancy her. That's how I left it. Do you know what I mean? It was that bad. Because at that time, the funny thing is, I had this conversation with an Arsenal fan and he was like, have you seen how many caps Koz is what you guys call it. Don't know what flash.
Better than Schweiny.
Have you seen how many caps Koz has got? And then I looked and I thought, oh my gosh, Sacco for Liverpool's getting caps at France. This is a bigger problem. They've got the same issue England have got.
I'm going to go on to Eugenia because he annihilated Cahill before annihilating Koscielny. So who's your pick of the three?
I mean, usually, you guys know, I usually just fly the Chelsea flag, but I'm not a big Cahill fan. But what I would say is I won't go for Vertonghen. And the reason why I won't go is I think if Vertonghen went to, disrespect or elite, a top four club, I think he'll probably have
maximum disrespect.
I think he'll probably experience some of the problems that Cahill and Koscielny experienced, that you're at a big club.
Slightly out of his depth.
Slightly out of your depth. Teams play teams tend to play it at a higher level against you because they're really up for it. And you have a spotlight on you that you don't get necessarily when you're at Tottenham Hotspur.
So if I'm going on
current form,
if you had to pick one of the three,
Cahill,
or would you replace Cahill with Vertonghen or Koscielny?
Honestly, overall, I think they're all around a similar level.
Off the fence.
But if I had to take one now, it would probably be Koscielny.
Interesting. Okay, so one vote for Koscielny, one vote for Vertonghen.
Ollie, you're
tainted like me, so it's hard to see.
Yes, come on, Ollie. Of the three, who's the best defender?
I'm going to go with Vertonghen, obviously. If you're talking about right now, looking at form and all the rest of it.
No, forget form. I'm just of the three.
I don't rate Cahill at all. Mm. I don't rate Cahill at all. So that's a starter, right?
So zero votes for Cahill,
you know. And then we're looking at Koscielny, who I'm still waiting to see what I'm missing. I just don't get it. I just don't get why. Yes, I know that he's dogged and he's determined. He's got a bit of aggression about him. But really, I can't see past his hairstyle and it makes me sick. I just look at a guy and just think, nah, he ain't for me. He's not for me at all. And I don't blame... Listen, I think Mertesacker's poor, but I don't blame him entirely for all of Arsenal's defensive issues. I think, Koscielny's got to take some of the blame as well. Mertesacker's poor, but Koscielny, he's not for me, Jordan. I'm not having it. But Vertonghen... Defensively, I've had question marks about him. He wanted to go forward too much. But this season, when I watch him alongside...
Well, he's got his mate next to him now.
Yeah, well, now watch him alongside Alderweireld. He looks a good player. He looks a very good player. Looks very accomplished defending. He does a good job. And, as Marvin was saying, going forward, he's comfortable bringing the ball. I just would have thought that Wenger, given his kind of when he first came in, it was always, he knows the French market and whatever. I can't understand how he didn't get someone like Varane before he went to Real Madrid or these kind of players. He knows that's his home. Surely if he can't go to France and get you
the best player, and the best centre-half in France
at the moment.
Yeah. If he can't, if
but
he
does
can't,
Varane, does Varane want to go Arsenal though? If no, I'm Varane,
no, 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 but the point is
not,
making
not
is
now,
before he
but
goes to Madrid.
Before he goes to Madrid.
So what happens is that someone, you know, Wenger offers him £5, and Real Madrid offer him £10, and Wenger wasn't move his price.
No, no, it's even worse than that. Wenger offers him £5, and then Madrid offer him £10, and Wenger goes, "Well, listen. I want you to know that I want to know that you're committed. So I'm now going to withdraw my offer and offer you £3 to see if you really want it."
Let's move on. Marvin, do you have this week's Tell Us the Scully Cap? And I must preface that by saying that last week there was an announcement that he could have actually removed the cap, but was under instructions to not let the cap off. Fill us in.
Well, you know how I feel, right? Because I mean, the fact that we call it the Scully Cap is the fact that I was pretty comfortable that maybe 2 years ago, Cech could have taken off the hat. And because...
Disrespect.
Because he's... And I mean this with the best intentions. Because no, I don't. Actually think he's not... I know G said in the dressing room behind closed doors, he's this big personality or whatever. But because I think it scarred him so badly, he hasn't got the mental granules to take it off and be a man. It's like a comfort blanket. It's like you see those kids holding
it's
on
the
to
insurance, yeah, Marvin. The insurance.
No,
people
because
said,
you see those kids holding on to teddies and blankets in the pram.
I'm not having this. Let me get my charts.
That's why Cech still has that hat on. And for me, I would say that. You know, fair play, it was a serious injury. Like, no one's taking that away from him. And now you almost think he's coming. He's probably got another 2-3 years at the top. He's not gonna take it off now. It's almost glued to his head. He probably wears it in bed. So it's here to stay, George. But I just, personally, I think if Schmeichel gets kicked in the head by whoever, like, you know, he used to have those duels with Ian Wright. As soon as they said, you can take it off, it'd have been off. It probably had been off before that. It probably said it's spoiling my hair, but check. I mean, he's probably got no brushes or combs in his house. He doesn't need them. Do you know what I mean?
Go on, G, very quickly, please.
No, I'm furious. I don't have to worry about that at all. From what I understand, right, I've been calling for this Tales of a Scully Cap to Scott, because I think it's disrespectful. But it's still going.
No, but G, when he plays well, I will say, you know what? That's why Arsenal signed him. If they win it, it'll be
that's why he wears the Scully Cap.
Yeah.
So what about Tales of Chelsea legend Petr Cech rather than Tales of Scully Cap?
Well, don't play for you anymore.
He's left Chelsea for a start.
Number one, he's left Chelsea. Number two, it's just less catchy. Try and put that in a hashtag. It takes ages. You use all the characters. Not even Tales of a Chelsea legend Cech. You know, Petr Cech. He was the whole name.
That's what he deserves. No, but seriously, from what I understand is that yes, he can, whilst he can take it off, if he was to have another impact injury like that, the chances of a fatality are so far increased that it's almost not worth the risk. And that's why he's kept it on. But also, I'm sure there's some merchandise and deals on something that's available on that as well.
And just finally, guys, I've got someone for this week's Pundit Watch, just very briefly. I want to ask a question, start with you, Ollie. Paul Scholes, is he the most miserable and negative pundit on TV, or just a guy that calls it as it is?
I haven't seen him recently, but I don't know if there's any particular... Is there any particular...
No.
Right, okay.
He's been quite a bit recently, but nothing...
No, I don't think so. I think he calls it as it is. That's just his style, really. And I suppose he rubs people up the wrong way sometimes.
Sorry to cut you there. Do you think it's got to the point now whereby, because he's been criticised for being so negative and miserable, he now plays on it, or do you think that's just how he is?
Negative and miserable? What are we calling negative and miserable?
Well, he's always,
I mean, we could say Roy Keane is negative, but I love him as a pundit. So,
well, yeah, well, again, what one person calls negative, one person just calls being real and being honest. But I can't think of any quote or any show I've seen him on where he's overly praised someone who's deserved it, but I can think of shows where he's overly criticised someone who's deserved it.
But I think that's just his way, and I think you've got to accept, and that's why these guys are, well, a lot of the time, that's why you get so many Man United ex or class of 92 Roy Keane and all these sort of people who've gone through Man United's door, because they were the successful team.
Standards are high.
Their standards are high. And you listen to Neville that bit more. You know, listen, if Neville was a right back, right? If Neville was a right back, he'd play for Stoke, right? We wouldn't care what he said. Yeah? Neville could have played for Stoke and he would have been just an average right back, but he happened to play for Man United. Yeah? But And because of that, we listen to every word he says. And we respect what he says because he's been there. He's been there. He's done it. He's played at a very top level. He knows what it takes to win championships. So he gets that. He gets that respect. And same with Paul Scholes. I'm not going to say, I'm not going to think, well, because he's on TV and he's moaning a lot, he's criticising people. That's what I want people to do as a pundit. I don't want people sitting on the fence saying, oh, well, yeah, he's all right, and not really saying what they mean. That's what his job is. His job is to call it out. If he thinks that some player's not doing it or a team's not playing the way they should, then he calls it. And I don't have a problem with him at all.
Marv?
He's Scholesy, right? I love him, right? I'd take him back now. But I think the issue is that Man United are just playing shit. So the problem is that he's calling it. He's actually calling it how he sees it. But I have this thing that I'm, you know, you're a United legend. Giggsy's your mate, right? You ring him all the time. I just think he's part of it. And we've talked about it before, is this whole soundbite thing, right? Paul Scholes is well respected. People listen when he talks. Because back when he was a player, he barely said a word, did he? And I think the issue is that he's now found a hook where a lot of his gripes are at United and a lot of them are correct. But I think because the first couple where he's like, I wouldn't want to play for us and stuff like that, because they got so much popularity, I think both BT Sport and him are playing on it to be hypercritical. And I totally agree. There's been so many times where I just thought, even if it's the team playing against United, give that person a bit of credit. Even the way he positions it is still quite negative. It's more, rather than, oh, look at the way he beat, Damian as an example. Like, Damian just held off there. What was he doing? It's always the wrong perspective. It is quite negative, but a lot of the things he said, I couldn't disagree with. I don't think there's a lot of world-class players that would want to play at the United team at the moment. And I think that's what it is. I think, you know, there is a problem there and he's calling it out. The problem is he's just saying it too much. Give people a bit. Show us another side to you, Scholesy. Do you know what I mean?
Gee, you haven't got anyone on TV. There's no Chelsea boys.
We had Lampard the other day.
No, we get Lampard, you know.
He's not a pundit. He was a guest.
I couldn't believe he got there on the show, to be honest. I don't know what he was doing there.
He was on there a couple of weeks running, though.
Because the US is out, right? So he's got nothing to
off-season,
do.
Off-season, yeah. But he's not a pundit. He's a guest, isn't he? He's not going to, you know.
So you're asking me about Scholes?
What's your view?
Yeah, for me, I think Scholes, you know, kills that ant with a sledgehammer. I don't think, it's like, I find him boring, first off, and I don't find any insight into his criticism. It's just straight criticism. There's no how you could make it better. There's no examples of where he was in the dressing room and how things were different. It's just Victor Meldrew type negativity, which I don't particularly want to see. There are enough negative pundits on the TV. And, you know, I think having the balance is good, but I would just like Scholes to maybe sometimes to say some positive things, or even if you're going to criticise, outline how you could improve it. And I also think he's the most overrated English player of all time, but that's a discussion for another debate.
Wow. That's one. But that's it for this week. Now on the Football Fans Podcast, the FFP, don't forget to subscribe via the iTunes library, Football Fans Podcast. Just click subscribe and join in on the fun. And don't forget, next week we hope to have a very special guest and we'll be giving away some top prizes in the competition too. Until next week, peace.